today we have Pastor Scott on the podcast. I'm so excited to have him with us today. He has wrote a book called Behind the Wire. He's a pastor at Rhodes Life Church. He goes into different jails and community and speaks about his story being a criminal convict. So I can't wait till we dive in and talk about how he went from prison to the pulpit. So thank you so much, Pastor Scott, for being here. So basically, let's just start from the beginning. Like, did you actually ever know Christ, or like, how did you find Christ? Did you grow up in a Christian home? Like, what did your childhood look like, and how did you start kind of getting into like the criminal stuff?
It started out pretty early. I don't know. I kind of began like as a crazy kid. I mean, even when I was like 4 or 5 years old, there was a little old lady that her name was Helen. She lived right next door to us, and I'd sneak into her house and hide her glasses. I mean, it was like this criminal, crazy mind was right from the very beginning. And then, you know, I'm in the neighborhood just raising Cain, basically throwing rocks through windows. I started lighting things on fire. We lived by the beach in Michigan City, and there's beach grass hills everywhere, and I used to burn them down. But it would never start with the intention, okay, I'm going to burn this huge beach grass mountain down. I was a fire bug, and I'd light these fires, and they'd get so big I can't stomp them out.
Right.
And then all the fire trucks from the whole Michigan City would be there, and I'm like 6 years old, 7 years old, and they would never know it was me, but I'd come home reeking like smoke and telling my parents, I don't know what happened, and they'd be like... So, you know, I started doing those things. I mean, even like... just crazy stories of just like what I was doing when I was a kid. I was like 7, 8 years old, and there's a restaurant down the street from our house, and I'd go into the restaurant posing to use the bathroom, but really I was going there to steal tips off the tables from the waitresses. Wow. And then I'd come out, and then I used to, when I was like 8, 9, 10 years old, there was a local zoo over there, and I would break into the zoo after hours, and I'd climb over the fence, and I'd dive into the wishing well pool.
Oh my God.
And I'd steal the change out of there so I could go buy some candy. So it was so here I am. So I mean, it started from the beginning, you know.
Yeah.
And then by 12 years old, I get my first arrest. I start drinking that same year. I start chewing tobacco that same year. So all these things started happening at a very opportune time. I mean, yeah, I was committing these crimes as a little kid, you know, in the single digits, mm-hmm. but like there was like this huge shifting turning point at 12. It's like there, I turned a corner, you know.
And there was no sight of like God in the picture, anything for your family?
No, never been to church or anything like that. Didn't grow up in a Christian household. Just living, you know, however I wanted to live, you know. And I lived in the inner city. I lived by the beach in Michigan City, but basically there was like, I live by the beach, but then there's this elementary school, and then on the other side of that was the Canada Project. So basically all the Canada Projects came to this inner city school, so I was one of the few white kids. So there was just a whole lot of crazy going on too, because you know, you put a white kid in an all black school, or you put a black kid in an all white school, there's going to be a little bit of more trouble, you know. So there was just, I was, you know, so there was a lot of that going on, you know, so I had all these little crazy things that I was doing, but also all this turmoil at school and just the fighting and just all the problems I was having at school. I was getting paddled by the time, I mean, from kindergarten on up. So it was pretty intense childhood. You know, I had two older brothers, and God bless those guys, but I was the little brother that they tortured.
Yeah. Were they in trouble like you were?
No, they weren't in trouble like I was, but they definitely brought the trouble on me. It's just because they're like literally 10 months apart. Mm. So my mom was basically pregnant for a year and a half.
Right,
you know?
Right.
Because she was pregnant, had my brother Aaron. A month later, she was pregnant with my brother Adam. So 10 months apart. So they became, you know, kind of inseparable. You know, they're like a year apart. So they became best friends. And then I was 3 years younger than them. So I was the pesky little brother always trying to hang out. So I had that going on too. So there was just a lot of drama. I was a very, very angry kid. There was just so much anger and just fight in me, you know, and just so much rebellion, really, is what it was. You know, just the evidence. I mean, look at that rebellion. Like, I wanted to hide the little old lady's glasses.
Yeah.
I mean, that's pretty screwed up. You know, I didn't learn that. You know, it just, the rebellion was there, and just so. So that's pretty much how I was coming out. So at 12, I get my first arrest. I steal my mom's car. And then that's where when I really stepped into this this cycle. And what I talk about in my book is what you repeat grows stronger. Yeah. So, you know, these cycles, these patterns, these strongholds began of this pattern of repeating, committing crimes at 12 years old, and then just getting into the system, you know, introduced into the juvenile detention centers. And I was known on a first name basis. I was a regular customer.
Wow.
At the juvenile detention center, and they all actually they would call me Ralphie because I look like the kid on the Christmas story. Apparently, I'm 42 and people still say it. So I don't, it's like, am I ever gonna like outlive this? You know, quick story, I came into prison 20 years later, and I was, you know, in the prison, I was in prison in a program, and I was walking down the hallway, and I ended up having this counselor that was actually. One of the detention officers when I was a kid 20 years earlier, and the first thing she said when she seen me and she looked at me, she said, "Ralphie," and this is like 20 years later. Yeah. I haven't seen this lady. So anyway, that's it. That's a short
little
story.
That's funny. That's awesome.
It's pretty crazy. But so I was in that hamster wheel, in that cycle, no church, in the system, in and out of juvenile detention centers, began juvenile prisons, extremely dangerous place.
Wow.
And then
that's literally prisons for teenagers, basically.
Literally prison, maximum security. It was maximum security prison for teenagers. And it was just a terrible, terrible place. When I look back at all my arrests and all the county jails and all the prisons that I lived in over the years, that was the most dangerous place I had ever been.
Wow.
It was just such a violent environment of just children with no boundaries.
Yeah.
You know, it was just like wide open, like like if it was brutal. So by 17, I had so many arrests on my record that they waived me for some misdemeanors, which is very unusual. You know, normally a kid gets waived from juvenile to adult court for something serious. You know, you kill somebody or something. But me, I was just in it so much. They're just like, this guy's, we can't help him.
Yeah.
We're just going to waive him over. So I ended up going to jail for the first time at 17. And then here we go. Within a year, I'm in prison for the first time in adult prison.
Wow.
So I began that pattern and that cycle of prison.
How different is juvenile prison to adult prison? Which one's worse, do you think?
The juvenile prison is obviously, like I said, more dangerous, but it's set up the same way.
Yeah.
You know, and that's one of the first things that I realized when I came into adult prison is I was like, wow, I was like, this is the same thing.
You
know, like it's set up the same. You know, it's like a campus, really.
Right.
It looks like a college campus, but, you know, obviously there's different, you know, different prisons or their maximum security. They got bars and doors. But as far as, like, the way that it's set up, it's you got to walk outside to buildings, to sidewalks, to go to eat. There's cafeteria. You know, like, it's not like a one-stop shop in, like, a dorm. You live in a building, and then you got to walk outside of that building down walkways.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's kind of like a little college campus, like a little city inside a prison. That's the same way that juvenile prison is. It's actually been converted. That prison that I was in as a juvenile has actually been converted to an adult prison. So that's what it is now.
Wow.
Yeah.
So was it your age that kind of took you into the actual prison, or was it like you did something that they were like, okay, now we're going to move you? Like, at what point do they move you from juvenile to adult?
Well, it was the juvenile detention center. You know, like I said, I ended up graduating into adult jail at 17. You know, they waived me, and then I started committing crimes as an adult.
Yeah.
They waived me from 17 to adult jail, and then here I am. I'm being arrested in adult jails now. I'm 18, and you know, I just begin that cycle. And
do
then
you feel
I,
like your crimes got worse as you gotten older?
They were pretty much the same. I mean, I pretty much had the same MO, really.
Yeah.
Mine was really about drinking and drugs and then doing, you know, violent things.
Yeah.
Like, as far as, like, you know, like, let's just say as a juvenile, one of the very strange things about me is that normally, we're at an underage drinking party.
Mm-hmm.
The cops come, kids, they run, or they just, you know, put their hands up. I'm like, I jump
ready
into a fight stance, and literally, like, I would fight these police officers when they'd come, because for me, it's like, if I'm going to go to juvenile, you're going to have to make me.
Right.
You know, and we're going to fight, and you're going to have to get me, because I'm not coming quietly.
Right.
And that's literally the kind of stance that I repeated and became very strong in my life as a child, you know, in elementary on up. So by the time I'm 18 years old, that's just who I was. It went from, you know, I talk a lot about this, is that this repeat what you grow stronger thing is, it's like, it goes from like just what I do, it becomes who I am.
It's
built in me. It becomes who I am, and just this rebellious fighting stance. So that's pretty much what I was getting into. I would get a DUI. I was really drinking and using a lot of drugs, so I would do dumb things like drink and drive. I'd get into a fight somewhere at a bar, and then I would always multiply every single arrest. You know, let's just say that I was getting arrested for a DUI. I would turn it into felony battery on a policeman, felony resisting, felony intimidation on an officer, resisting arrest, disorderly conduct. Like I'd always land in jail with like a half dozen charges.
Through your teenage years into adulthood, there was still no hearing of the Lord or anything like that. Like never had an opportunity.
I did, but I didn't really recall it until later. There was a summer. My aunt and uncle are pastors of a church, and they have been for a long time. And they had me out for a summer with my cousins that are near my age. Mm. And I went out there for like a month in the summertime, and I'd go to church. They'd make me go to church because I was there. And that was the only like real interaction I ever had with God or a church. But I was so crazy and rebellious. Yeah. I wasn't even really paying attention. I was out there for about a month, and I'd have to go to church every week, you know, and things like that. But so I think that seeds probably were planted. You know, I look back and I reflect on it, but all these years, it never registered to me at all. I didn't even really remember that until just in recent times. Right. Actually, when I started writing the book, it kind of was something that
dawned
I remembered.
On you.
I had a little bit of interaction for like a month when I was like 13, 14 years old.
Yeah. And so after you were in prison, adult prison for a while, that's when they kind of considered you a career criminal.
Career criminal, I mean, by all points, I mean, you get a couple of dozen arrests under your belt, and you just get into that cycle. And you know what, when people read the book that's been in jail, they're like, this is me, you know, because even though I tell these guys a lot, or the women, or whatever prison I'm in, even though that I haven't walked in your shoes and you haven't walked in mine, if you've been in the system for a while, there's a lot that we can a lot of similarities, a lot of things that we can relate with.
Yeah.
And that's one of them. You get in the system, and it's like a culture in itself. You get into this criminal culture, this drug and criminal lifestyle culture, and then it just starts to become who you are. And then you just, the stronger culture wins, like we talk about here at our church. And you know, and that was the culture that was in me. So when we go into the prisons and all that, you know, that's what it is. It's the stronger as culture is won, and you're living in that cycle.
Yeah. So going through like all those crimes, how did you even get to a point where you were open to hearing the Lord or meeting the Lord? Like, how did that even come about? Were you in prison for like the long term at that point, or what did that look like?
So basically, it's really a strange story. It just kind of goes along with just God does what he wants to do, you know. I actually went to a horror movie, and I was out. I was living nasty. I was really, you know, I had a couple of dozen arrests under my belt. I was with a woman at the time that was my girlfriend. She was pregnant, and I was just really just at the bottom in my life. And I ended up going to a horror film with her, and it was called The Exorcism of Emily Rose. Real spiritual, godly movie. No, actually, it's pretty crazy. I mean, there's a whole lot of story behind that movie that I didn't even know about. But I went to it as a horror movie entertainment.
Yeah.
And so here I am. I'm in this movie, and I experienced God, and it was weird.
What?
I experienced the presence of God. I didn't know God. I never experienced God, but at the same time, I knew it was God, and it rattled me in such a way that I went outside to the car, and I just broke down bawling my eyes out, like literally. And my girlfriend's like wigging out. She's like, I don't know what, she didn't know what was going on.
Yeah.
And I didn't even know how to explain what was happening.
That's what I was going to say. Like, how? You just, like, felt it?
I just experienced God. Like, I felt the fear of the Lord. I look back now, and I felt the reverence and the fear of God and the respect of God, that there was a God. And it was just such a crazy thing. And I ended up going home and getting out the Yellow Pages. I went to her house, and I got out of Yellow Pages. I mean, that tells you when that was. That was in 2005. Yeah. So I'm in a phone book in 2005, you know, trying to find it, like, a church. I didn't even know what kind of church to call. Mm-hmm. You know, I just was like, I got to find a Christian church somehow. So I ended up trying to call some people. I didn't get a hold of anybody. Coincidentally, the very next day, I get picked up on a warrant. I didn't even know that I had a warrant.
Wow.
I had a warrant, didn't even know about it. I got picked up the very next day in something that I had never done, that I had been arrested dozens of times at this point in my life. I said, I need to get a Bible.
Wow.
And so that was a strategic timing by God, and he had my attention, and I got, and then bam, I went to jail, and I had this time. Now, I was going into my third prison sentence. I had some felony warrants out, and I began to read the Bible, and I read the Bible for about 2 weeks straight, just studying it, just trying to figure things out. And I ended up, they had a church service at the county jail, and I ended up going out to the church service in the county jail, and I heard the gospel, and they had an altar call, and I just knew that I needed to go forward, man. And there was like 50 guys in this church service, 50 inmates, and I was like this, the most rebellious, prideful person, just so angry, and I just felt so broken at that moment. And I went forward, and God answered that faith, and I had tears in my eyes before these men, something I would never do. It was such a humbling moment that I would be crying my eyes out, coming forward, professing Christ in front of 50 other inmates, and God just reached out, and he really answered to that faith that day. And I know that I was never the same, because I had this terrifying fear of death my whole life, that I used to have night terrors all through my childhood years. And immediately, when I professed Christ, like, I turned to the other guys that were standing there receiving Christ, I said, man, if I die, I know where I'm going.
Yeah.
And it was such a powerful thing, because it was like this fear terrified me. And like that fear, that spirit of fear of death came off, and I immediately had a hunger for God's word, man. And I went off, and it was just such a powerful thing that I went off for this year of prison and just studying God's word for like 8 hours a day, man. Yeah. I was like in it to win it.
Wow.
And my son was born at this time. I go off to prison for the third time, and I this relationship with Christ starts, and I'm God's radically changing me, and I have this girlfriend, and she has my son while I'm in prison. And then I ended up meeting my son for the first time in the prison visiting room. And then I get out, and I'm like, I have this hope and this desire and this dream that, like, now my life is going to change. Yeah. We're going to get married. I'm going to be a father.
Yeah.
Things are going to all line up. And then as soon as I get out, she leaves me.
Wow.
And then she pulls my son out of my life, and just like, she doesn't want to have anything to do with me. She doesn't want him to have anything to do with me. I ended up like trying to, you know, get things going. But again, the stronger culture had this hold on me, because I was new to the kingdom of God. I had this culture of just living for the world. It was so strong in my life. I tried to do what was right. Eventually, I ended up drinking, getting a DUI, got some more charges. I lost my job. I lost my driver's license. I ended up losing my car and my home within like a week or two. Yeah. And then I just tried to tap out, and I tried to kill myself. You know, I took some razors, and I put like 40 stitches in my arm, was bleeding out, ended up, the ambulance came, ended up taking me to the hospital, and it was a pretty crazy thing, you know. And then within a couple of months after that, you know, my girlfriend with my son feels sorry for me. A couple months after that, she ends up letting me see my son and lets me have him for the night.
Yeah.
And I end up getting drunk, driving my kid out to a crack house in the hood.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so that's the state of how messed up I was at this point in my life, you know. So I'm here, he's 18 months old. I lock him in a car. I go into a crack house. I'm in there for a while, get some crack. I'm drinking, you know. I come back out. He's crawled from the back seat to the front seat. He's got his hands on the windshield. I mean, on the window, screaming and crying in terror. And, you know, I get into the car and I'm driving home holding my son, drunk, high, smoking crack while I'm driving him, holding him, crying because I can't put him in his baby seat because he's just too upset. So, you know, my son's mom ended up finding out the next day about it. She took him out of my life and said, I'll never see him again. And then I just crumbled and tried to kill myself again. And I ate a couple of hundred pills, drank like a case of beer down. I thought for sure it was game over. I ended up waking up like 5 hours later with no hangover, no symptoms of anything. Jeez. And it was a complete miracle. And I could just hear God speaking in my heart that it's not over till He says it's over.
Wow, yeah.
So even as I'm in this moment and like I try to kill myself, I was completely shocked that I was alive. I literally even called her, mm-hmm. his mom, and just telling her, apologizing, you know, like as a last kind of, you know, I just wanted to try to make peace with her and not tell her even what was going on. I just wanted her to know that I was sorry about my life and who I had become and our son.
Right.
And I thought it was game over. And when I woke up and I didn't know what to do. So I scrambled and left another state. And then I just went down this darkness. You know, I talk about in my book, darkness surrounded me, literally. Yeah. You know, and I went down into this disgusting, homeless lifestyle of just living like literally like an animal.
Yeah.
Sleeping outside, sleeping on the side of buildings. I slept in dumpsters on cold nights, ate out of dumpsters, standing outside of gas stations, panhandling for change, begging for the, you know, for the next drink, for the next drug, and just was living. And I used to walk, and this was down in Florida. I left a couple of states from Indiana down to Florida, and I used to walk out on the boardwalk, out on the coastline, down the boardwalk, and I used to stand on the edge of the pier, and I used to just, I would just almost just jump into the water. I just wanted to die. I just was going to try to kill myself again because I just was so disgusted with my life. My family didn't want to have anything to do with me because they were so disgusted with everything that I was doing. And I would just walk out there and just, I was going to jump in so many different times. And I just was stuck in there. And it was pretty crazy, you know, about just like being in this moment. You know, and here's a crazy thing I even talk about in my book. You know, I ended up getting enough change up to buy a bottle of some alcohol, and I had it in a paper bag, and I ended up, you know, I went to the liquor store, the whole booze in paper bag, the whole hobo thing, you know, because that's what I was, you know. And so I ended up, you know, in Florida, you can't drink out in publicly like that, so I had to go hide somewhere. So I went under a bridge, and I'm under there drinking this alcohol, and I get done with it. I end up tossing the bottle, and I ended up coming back up, and I'm walking down the street, and I walk past this homeless shelter, and there's this guy standing out there. So him and I get in this conversation, and then all of a sudden Jesus gets in the conversation. We start talking about God, and he's like, man, I want you to hear this thing. He's like, just wait here. So he runs into the homeless shelter, comes out with a CD player, like one of those headphones and an actual CD. So it's kind of a crazy thing. Cool. But so I put these headphones on, and it's a preacher, and it's a sermon. And this preacher's saying that there's all these people wandering around with no idea that they have a calling, that they have a purpose for their life. They're just living life, and they just randomly, and they just don't even know what's going on. And he's like, they're just unaware. They have this huge calling on their life, and they have no idea.
Yeah.
And he's like, I tell you the truth, that there is a homeless man drinking out of a paper bag under a bridge right now that can out-preach anybody in this church.
Wow.
And it just, man, like just wrecked me. You know, like God was literally speaking straight to me, like to my heart, like I'm in this nasty, nasty existence, but God's still there loving me, like getting a word to me to encourage me, to like, to move up out of there, that he's still there with me. And, you know, and I ended up just, it just cut through some of the crud in my heart, and I ended up leaving Florida and hitchhiking 2,000 miles.
Wow.
I hitchhiked 2,000 miles. Think about that. That's pretty crazy.
That's hitchhike. Crazy.
So it took a while.
Yeah, heck yeah.
Living outside, hitchhiking, you know, and just all these things. I ended up going out to Arizona, hitchhiked all the way out there, was out there living homeless, the same thing. After a couple of years of this existence, I ended up getting a hold of a family member to get me back into town, you know, and they ended up, I was going to turn myself in because I had felonies that were pending up there, and I took off after I tried to kill myself. So I was going to turn myself into that. I was just exhausted. And I ended up getting in trouble with some other friends. Well, I called an old friend, and let's go out and have some drinks. And then before you know it, I'm arrested, got like five new felonies on my record. So I got to go off to jail to go deal with those. And they shipped me off to this other county to deal with those old felonies. And then I go off to prison again. And this is my fourth time. And then I get out of prison after doing a couple of years. And within a month, I'm back on a violation.
Wow.
And then I pick up my Bible again, and I read that, Jeremiah 29:13, if you seek me with your whole heart, you'll find me. And God just like literally just like the scales came off, really.
Yeah.
And like
in jail.
In prison. And like literally like he brought me back to when I professed Christ and really brought out, you know, like I began to chase God for a couple of years in prison. Yeah. And it was incredible what God had done. And then, bam, I get out of prison. And within a week, I find Road to Life Church.
Look at that. So how did you find Road to Life Church? I literally forget this part of the story.
So somebody that was actually coming here to the church invited me. You know, they told me about it. And then I ended up coming here and checking it out for myself. And when I walked in, you know, like many people have said when they've come to Road to Life, that they just felt the Holy Spirit so strong. Tears were in my eyes. I just, even while I was walking into the lobby and walking into the sanctuary and worship was going, I just knew that God had was calling me to be at this church. And I ended up sitting in service. I don't remember what was preached, but I got a hold of Pastor Dave. I found him right after service. I went up and found him, and I got to talking to him and just told him I just wanted to get involved and just serve in any way I could. I don't even care. I just want to volunteer. Is there any way that I could be a part of what is going on here?
Right.
I just really feel like I'm supposed to be here. And then Pastor Dave took me over to the kiosk, showed me what to do. Within that next week, I was in Kidtown, part of the mobile church, helping load equipment out. And then that just began a journey of volunteering and getting being a part of.
And after that first service, you never left.
Never left after that.
Dang. So then you were here, and then what? Like, where did your life go from after that first service? Job-wise, life-wise, like, where did it go?
So basically, I just started getting involved in the church and anything that was going on. I didn't care what it was, any event, any church service, whatever was happening, I was going to be there. I didn't have a driver's license. I didn't have a car. I didn't have any money. I literally got out of prison with just the clothes on my back. I didn't have all those things, but the one thing that I did not have as well when I got out that last time is I didn't have any excuses.
Yeah.
I didn't have any excuses, so literally, like, I was riding my bike, walking, and getting to all these different places. Like, my brother helped me out with getting a job with him, doing some concrete work part-time, so I started doing that. But then, you know, I'm in Portage, and church is in Chesterton, so that's like 7-8 miles. So basically, I was riding my bike 7-8 miles at 4:30 in the morning in the dark, in the cold, in the rain, in the snow. Like, I was getting to church to help be a part of it and load in and load out and everything. So when people's like, oh, it's a little snowy out or it's a little rainy, I can't drive, I'm like, dude, you need to get hungry
for God.
So
then how did you get to the point of like actually trying to get into the internship and all that kind of stuff?
All right, so about after a year of just volunteering, after everything, riding my bike to all these different things and just getting connected, really, under the covering of Road to Life, I applied for the internship program. Probably about 9 months after I was volunteering everywhere, and then I went through the application process, met with Pastor Dave, met with Pastor Vanessa, and then they ended up accepted me on as an intern to become an intern on staff, and it just totally blew me away, you know, that they would allow me to do that and just be a part of it. And it was just a really, really incredible thing because I had built up this really strong reputation because, like I said, what you eat grows stronger, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I had, for a good reason, I had created this very strong reputation of, like, I can't be trusted, I'm not dependable.
Yep.
And so people just kind of gave up on me over the years, you know, because after a couple of decades of being getting worse and worse and worse, I mean, it's like, or some would say worser.
Yeah. Yeah.
If my wife was here, she would say, say more worse. Anyway, so anyhow, so I, you know, so them accepting me on was huge.
Yeah. And you went from the internship and then to staff.
Right.
How did you feel that moment that they, you know, had given you the opportunity to be on staff as a pastor?
That was incredible, you know. I mean, I was so blown away that they even would hire me on as an intern, let alone, like, the day that Pastor Dave gave me some keys to the office. I was like, what is really going on here?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, so these were huge things. And then, you know, after a year, like, I get a company credit card. And these were, like, things that were unheard of for me. Like, people like me and the way that I lived, nobody gave you their keys.
Yeah.
They wouldn't even think about giving you some kind of credit card.
Right.
You know? So all these things were happening. It was totally miraculous through God. And then, you know, them doing that. So then like I said, I came on a staff, started working hard. And then the prison ministry happened through there.
Yep.
As an intern, you know. I approached Pastor Dave about a prison ministry. And he said he had something in mind. And he was working some things out. And And I was like, you know, I'd love to be a part of it. And he's like, I want you to lead it. And I was like, what?
Whoa, yeah.
What's really going on here?
Yeah.
And I think that that's a big deal. And I want to stop and just say that for a second, because believing in people is huge, you know, and not just somebody that's living crazy. When you have people that are going to come around you and help you and believe in you and to get to propel you into, like, God's destiny for yourself, I mean, that's huge. So that was... All these things were happening, you know, like coming under this covering of the church and these godly people just coming and just believing in me and then supporting it through, like, what their actions, you know, like, I'm not just saying I believe in you. I'm going to set up these opportunities to show you that I believe in you and to really pull this potential out, because I had no idea what was in me. You know what I mean? Like, because I never even got close to touching potential in my life ever.
I'm just laughing because I remember when you, man, you would show up to the space with that flip phone, and it was like, we were already on, like, iPhone number 3, and I was like, what is this dude? Like, and at that time, I didn't know, like, your whole criminal background, so I'm like, this dude keeps walking in with a flip phone.
He landed in a time machine. He's a prehistoric man. I was living like
a
prehistoric.
Like, somebody help him. Like, he has a flip phone.
Will somebody pray for him?
Right. Flip phone and some, like, little janky computer. And I was like, Jesus.
Yeah, it was like a tiny little computer, too. It was like some little flip computer of, like, you know, like a 7-inch screen or something crazy.
Yeah, you'd, like, enter staff meetings and we'd all have our iPhones and Macs. And we're looking at Scott like, his flip phone.
Hey, what I say in my book, and I have it printed on T-shirts, I say you get started by getting started.
Yeah,
and
for
that's,
sure.
And that's the heart of it. Like, I was getting started by getting started. I wasn't going to allow, like I said a minute ago, like, I got out of prison that last time, and I didn't have a lot of things. And one of the things I didn't have anymore either, though, that was really important in my life, I didn't have any excuses.
Yeah.
Like, I was going to go for it. And somewhere in my heart, like, God had let me know if I just... You know, like, one of the culture statements here is listen to God and do what he says.
Yeah.
Like, literally, if I would do that, he would make a way for me to get all the things that I needed. Like, if it's God's provision, right? If it's God's mission, it's his provision.
Yeah.
And it's just, like, literally, you know, we have all these funny things to say, but it's literally, if we do
that's true.
Like, God is going to supply his mission. Like, all the things that I need to be able to excel, to go from glory to glory, to go from level to level, he's going to get it to me.
Yeah, and I think it's so important, too, that you said you got saved in prison, and then you came out, and, like, all hell broke loose.
Yes.
And I say that in this podcast a lot, because... feel like people think they get saved and then it's just like, you know, the clouds open up and it's just miraculous and everything's perfect, and that's not how it is. And that happens a lot when you get saved and you know, ask Christ. Sometimes it gets worse before it gets better. I mean, even as a staffer, you're a pastor, you're doing prison ministry, and this is kind of the plot twist in your book, is you actually went back to jail as being a pastor. So tell us a little bit about that.
You know, faith not tested can't be trusted. So God sets up opportunities for your faith to be...
I love how optimistic you're talking.
Yeah. God sets up these opportunities for your faith to be able to grow and to trust him. And he'll do it in some pretty outrageous ways. You know, it's like they say, you know, you pray for patience, you're going to be in traffic jams and lines all day. And that God's not going to give it to you. He's going to give you opportunities for it. So basically, you know, we're in multiple prisons regionally. We're reaching thousands of prisoners. We're leading thousands of prisoners to Christ. The prison ministry is thriving. My wife Danielle, I ended up getting married to my wife Danielle as an intern at Road to Life. I met her at Road to Life Church, and so all that happened. So here we are.
Life is looking really good.
Yes, everything was going really well at this point. Though I had to go through the fire a lot, you know. But good thing that there was the fourth man in the fire the whole time with me, right?
Yeah.
So there's a song at Road to Life. It's called Through the Fire. So we all got to go through that fire. So I had to go through the fire. You know, went through, you know, we're married. Life is good. Thriving. Life has gotten better. We're in multiple prisons, reaching thousands of prisoners. And then we go to get into another prison to be able to volunteer in another prison. And it happened to be a juvenile prison one of the juvenile prisons that I was in, like 25 years earlier. And when I applied for it, a warrant, a felony warrant from Florida came up from like a decade earlier. So here it is, you know, we all reap what we sow. We can't hide from that. You sow something, that the crop can come up 10 years later. Yeah, I'm proof of that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so eventually, you know, whatever you sow is going to come back into your life at some point. And this happened to take 10 years for it to come back. So the crazy thing is this warrant comes out. It's four felonies. It's 20 years that I'm looking at here. It's not extraditable.
Wow.
To Florida. It's a regional warrant, so if I don't go near Florida, I don't have to deal with it. But at the same time, it red flagged me in the Department of Correction, so it blocked me out of the prison system. So here I am, the prison pastor at Road to Life Church, thriving prison, and I can't go into the prisons.
Right.
So that was like crazy. So I'm like, there's not even a choice. Like, you know, I could stay up here and be safe, or I could miss God's plan and purpose for my life, or I go down there and face the music. And but at the same time, I had this really supernatural sense of peace. When God says that, you know, the peace that passes all understanding, that's not from the world, that comes from Him, that's what I had. Like, I literally was like, this was God's timing. This came out, and I needed to go face this thing. And, you know, the message that I was getting from God is that, you know, you have to go back to go forward, that your progress has stopped, that I have to go back to move forward. And, so I, you know, ended up talking to my pastors about it. You know, I was like, I told them what was going on, and I told them I had to go face it. And they just did some really incredible things too, just to be supportive of that walk of faith that I was gonna do.
Yeah.
You know, and they were just like, you know, they ended up, you know, I ended up finding an attorney. They ended up paying for it. They ended up meeting with my wife and I and said, hey, while you go down there, we're going to pay your salary every week so your family's taken care of. Like, I mean, who really does that, honestly?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sitting in jail collecting a paycheck every week. I mean, that's pretty crazy, man.
Yeah.
Like,
and it was scary because it was like a long time, right? 20 years you were facing.
20 years is what it was facing.
So it wasn't like you were just going there like, okay, I got to take care of this for a couple months maybe.
Yeah, Pastor Dave was like, all right, we're going to pay your check every week, but hurry up and come back.
Yeah, in 20 years. And that's what we all believe, that you would be gone 20 years.
Yeah, 20 years hanging over my head, and it was pretty crazy situation. So I get on a plane, fly down there, turn myself in. I had to sit in the county jail for 22 days before I got a court date.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and then so we have this court date, Pastor Dave, my wife, some other friends ended up flying down there as character witnesses. I go before the judge, and they all go up before the judge. They, you know, they're all character witnesses, and, you know, with tears, you know, it was very powerful for me, you know, to be there, because all the years up until I really, you know, started to walk this thing out with Christ, like, even if I had a quarter in my pocket, I had nobody to call. Like, I had literally burned all these bridges. Yeah. And
nobody wanted to speak on your behalf.
Right. And, like, I mean, I couldn't even get a collect call to somebody that'll, you know, if I called somebody from jail, like, nobody was going to answer it. Right?
Yeah.
So here I am now. God is such in the business of redemption and restoration. I got people flying 1,000 miles, getting on planes to stand in a courtroom for me. So that was a miracle in itself. So we're standing there, and they're talking about my life in tears and just how I've affected their life, and it was just really powerful. So we go through this whole thing, and then what goes on is that, and then you know, in the midst of all this, the prosecutor slides this plea to me for 14 months in prison, and I sign it quick, man. Yeah. I'm like, 20 years, 14 months sounds good. Let's do it. Yeah. I can do that.
Yeah.
And then after the judge hears all these people there that are talking to me, he denies it. He's like, no, I can't accept this plea agreement.
Oh my gosh.
He's like, the only plea agreement I'm going to accept is an open plea of 20 years. And what that means is that he could give me 20 years.
Wow.
He can make a decision, whatever he wants to, up to 20 years. So I'm like, whoa, you know? So I said, okay, I'll do that. So then he leaves for a 5-minute recess, and it seemed like forever. Yeah. He comes back out.
Because you were freaking out on those 20 years.
Yeah, I'm like, I'm thinking about 20 years. I'm like, this is crazy.
Yeah.
So the judge comes back from his recess, and then he comes back even talking about the Apostle Paul. And he's like, you know, he did a lot of great work while he was in prison. If you want to call that a prison, it was much worse than a prison.
Yeah.
And he's like, he done some of his best work from a prison. And he's like, don't you agree? And I'm like, yes.
You're going to be there 20 years.
and then he's like, and then he goes, and then he's on to say, he's like, don't you think you could do a lot of good work too while you're in prison? I'm like, yes.
Yeah.
So I'm waiting for the hammer to drop, you know, him and just give me the sentence.
At that time, like, how real did 20 years actually seem to you?
I really felt like I was going to get some time. I didn't know how many years, but I definitely felt like it was years. Just his whole demeanor, his stance, the way that he was talking about it, like it just, he denied 14 months. So if you denied 14 months,
you want longer.
Logically, you're thinking that's not enough time. So he's about to crack my head with some time more than that. So I'm like the whole time.
Yeah.
So it's like you could cut the tension with a knife. And, you know, then I had, you know, everybody there. I'm thinking about all these things are flashing through my head, my wife and just the ministry and just what we built and what God was doing and all these things. And then, you know, he kind of just starts talking about a number of different things, you know, and then he flips this gear and then he goes into this other thing and he's like, you know, he's like, well, with all that being said, and he's like, you know, I don't know anybody that heard what I just heard would conclude that incarceration is necessary at all. And at this point, I don't even hear this. I didn't hear any of this. I'm just like, okay,
just
tell me the time.
Yeah.
How much time am I getting? Because I don't even hear this. Yeah. I got the videos now of the courtroom and everything. So I didn't even know that was said until I got the video in front of me.
Yeah.
And then he says, so the best outcome is that, and he goes on to say, the best outcome is that I'm going to terminate this case immediately. I'm going to release you, and the only downside is, he's like, I am going to sentence you to Disney where your family and friends are right now, where your pastors are right now. I'm gonna sentence you there. And he says, you can go do your time there. And I was just like, it was like, I when he said that, I just literally like cried like I've never cried before. He said, you can do your sentence at Disney. Who in the heck ever has said that? What judge? Like 20 years, you could cut to anticipation with a knife, and then he drops his hammer straight face the whole time. And just bam, like you are released immediately, and you can go do your sentence at Disney with these people today. And I just lost it, and I cried like I've never cried before. I mean, just, it was like this fear.
Yeah, again.
This huge spirit of fear just came off of me.
Wow.
Again, and just this freedom, and I just couldn't believe it. And literally, I'm bawling my eyes out, and in the Florida courtroom, they're so strict that I can't even look at the people, and I was crying so hard, the judge said to, you know, my pastor and, you know, my wife and everybody, he's like, you should come and give him a hug, you know? And, like, they all rushed in to give me
I'm
a hug.
Sure.
And all the guards are kind of like, they're like robots, you know, short-circuiting because they're not even supposed to look. And they're over there hugging me, and they're not supposed to touch anybody. And
you can get in trouble for looking at somebody.
Yes, let alone. And then they mob me. They're hugging me. The officers of the courtroom afterwards are coming up shaking my hand. Like, things like this has never happened before. They've never even heard anything like this before.
Wow.
Just like from where I was to where I was when I stood before them, and they were so happy that I was released.
Holy cow.
And then I ended up getting, you know, within a couple hours I'm out on the road with Pastor Dave and my wife, and we're driving to Disney, so we go Yeah, we ride off into the sunset.
Right? That story is so funny to me because it's like, yeah, 20 years and then Disney. Like, yes. What in the world? And so I'm sure at that point you looked back on your life and you're like, holy cow, like, look what God can do, you know?
And I literally was on the phone in Disney with one of the wardens of the prison in Indiana, and he made the calls to the, you know, the Department of the Corrections. So before I even left Disney, before I even left Florida, like, I was opened back up into the whole Indiana prison system. So that was a miracle too.
Jeez. And so how did, like, the inmates that you have been preaching to for months and months before this, like, how did they react knowing you put your life on pause and actually went back? Like, that was probably a huge testimony to them of, hey, you have to face your stuff.
Right. And that's really what I did. I actually, when I got red flagged out of there, I actually set up a green screen and I preached a sermon from here at Road to Life Church to them. Mm-hmm. And I stood there, and basically the sermon in the video for them was, you know, faith without works is dead. And like, what lengths will you go to follow the voice of God and to answer to what, you know, the calling that God has on your life? Yes. What are you willing to be able to step up to and to be able to listen to God and do what he says? And they got to see that. And I said, and I planned it that they would be watching it while I'm in jail.
What was their reaction?
It was, Danielle brought it into them, and she said it just totally blew their minds, you know, because I was like, if you're watching this video right now,
I'm in jail too.
I'm in prison just like you are.
Yeah.
You know, and it really touched a lot of people, you know, and just really letting them know that there are going to be things that we're going to have to face. There's going to be hard things just because you become a Christian and things you begin to, because there is a transition. You know, it's messy, very difficult in the beginning to go from this lifestyle to this lifestyle, from this culture to this culture, to really, you know, walk into this thing. But then there's, you're living in victory now, but then there's still going to be a lot of things that you're going to have to face, a lot of hard things, especially things from your past that might come up. That,
for sure.
But now we have God with us and we can get through it. And it's just a real testament of what God can do with a little bit of faith. You know, I took that little bit of faith, went down there, and then bam, God parted the Red Sea, you know?
Yeah. And now you're opening up to more campuses for prisons. You've been to Belize.
Yeah.
You've been to Belize prison, and you wrote a book, like.
Right. Behind the Wire, A Prisoner's Journey to the Pulpit, and we give out books, you know, all through the prison system. We're in about a dozen prisons right now.
Wow.
And we're reaching thousands of prisoners, and we are in about a dozen right now in Indiana. We've just started going to prisons in Michigan. Now I'm going to be going to our Illinois prisons starting in a couple of weeks.
Cool.
So we're going to be breaking off into that, and God is just opening up doors, you know, as we remain faithful, you know, he's just.
Yeah, and you have it on your website that people can buy your book, but then also buy a book for a prisoner, right?
Yeah.
So what is your website? Hit us with that.
It's scottheiberger.com. So you can go to that website, and like Autumn said, that you can buy a book for yourself, or you can donate books to prisoners, and we make sure at our events that our prisoners get the books. And so whenever we do special events, as long as the prison approves, we bring them in, and usually they do, and we're able to give out hundreds of books at a time. And when we go into these prisons,
that's awesome.
Because Behind the Wire isn't just, it's not a memoir, it's my book. It's a book that has my life through it, but the stories of my life through it are just more about stories to connect and relate with people that are in similar cycles. Everybody that reads it that's in the cycle is like, man, that's just like me, you know, and that's the point of it.
Yeah.
And then, but most importantly, what the book is set up for is to help people, show people, this is where I was, this is how I got here.
Yeah.
So I give them step-by-steps, challenges, action
that's
steps,
cool.
things like that to be able to help them to be able to break out of the cycle with Christ, obviously.
That's awesome.
Without Christ, it's not going to happen.
Yeah.
So.
And then you can follow Pastor Scott also on Instagram to see what he's doing. And then let's just talk a couple minutes about this movie that is now being created about you. Tell us the name and how all that is kind of going right now.
Yeah, pretty awesome. You know, there's a movie called Pardoned by Grace. It's a story about my life. The production company is called Graham Family Films. The president of the company is Dr. Ben Graham. He's actually a grandson of Billy Graham. And they're out of Nashville, Tennessee. They've partnered with Atonement Pictures, which is a distribution company, to film a movie and distribute it that's going to be coming out in 2020. and we're really excited about it. It's starring Joey Lawrence. He's playing me. And then also one of the bigger names in the film is Michael W. Smith, famous gospel singer. He's playing Pastor Dave, my pastor. And there's a number of other cast members as well, but that the film is going to be out, like I said, in 2020. We're not sure. They're looking possibly in the spring, but there's no date written in stone yet, but it's coming soon. And it's just really mapping out the story of my life. And then also just the title of the movie came from that I was pardoned by grace literally through my life, but it's really zeroing in on the Florida courtroom and just what happened in there. But if you really think about it, like, my life is a testament of being pardoned by grace by God. And that's really what the story is. And it's a missional movie. Mm-hmm. It's a missional faith-based movie. And it's about the kingdom of God. It's really centering on how bad I was, but how good Jesus is and how he's got a plan for our life, no matter how messy it is. And at Road to Life Church, we say Jeremiah 29:11. That's a big verse here. And it's that God knows the plans that he has for us, not to harm us, but to prosper us, to give us a future and a hope and an expected end. And, you know, and that's really what the movie has a lot to say about, is that God has a plan for our life and an expected end.
Yeah.
It's going to be awesome.
That's so cool. That's so cool. So thank you again, Pastor Scott, for taking time to talk to us today. And everybody who's out there, follow his social media. Keep an eye out for his movie, and it'll be here soon. So thank you again.
I hope you enjoyed this podcast. If you have any feedback or even need some encouragement, contact me on all social media outlets. Or you can email me at autumntomlinson4@gmail.com.